This podcast features information about drug use and distribution. Also, we have used pseudonyms for the names of the main players and their businesses in this drama. Listener discretion is advised.
The Queensland Police Service acknowledges Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the first Australians. We recognise their cultures, histories and diversity, and their deep connection to the lands, waters and seas of Queensland and the Torres Strait. The Queensland Police Service respectfully acknowledges First Nations peoples as the traditional owners and custodians of Queensland. We pay our respects to them, their cultures, and to their elders, past, present and emerging.
I'm Assistant Commissioner Catherine Innes of the Queensland Police Service, Crime and Intelligence Command. The members of my command work tirelessly to make Queensland the safest state, protecting our community from serious and organised crime. In this podcast series, the Crime and Intelligence Command will provide insight into a number of challenging cases and the effort, perseverance and innovation required to get the final breakthrough. Importantly, I encourage you to collaborate with us. You may be the person who provides our next breakthrough. Together, we can prevent, disrupt, respond and investigate.
Welcome to Breakthrough, the official podcast of the Queensland Police Service, Crime and Intelligence Command. I'm investigative journalist and author Matthew Condon, and for decades, I've written about crime, from cold case murders to serial killers to the workings of the criminal underworld. Breakthrough takes you, for the first time, inside the Queensland Police Service's Crime and Intelligence Command groups and gives you an insight into a range of extraordinary investigations. In each episode, the QPS will share aspects of its case files and allow you to peer over the shoulders of real-time investigators in their relentless pursuit of justice, in their quest to bring answers and solace to victims of crime, their families, and the community at large. Importantly, the podcast also encourages you to get involved, to come on board with QPS investigators and try and resolve outstanding mysteries and unsolved cases. You may just be the listener who holds that final vital clue that will lead to the breakthrough in a case. In our last episode, The Tip-Offs Part 1, we took you deep inside the murky world of the dark net, an online haven for drug dealers, gun merchants, and other nefarious criminal activities. We introduced you to Jack and Jill Jones, the upwardly mobile socialites from exclusive Helensvale on the Gold Coast, whose lavish lifestyle, it transpired, was funded by a sophisticated online drug distribution network. Thanks to the diligence of the Queensland Police Service's Synthetic Drugs Operations Unit, the Joneses were charged with numerous drug offences and granted strict conditional bail. Then, virtually overnight, the couple abandoned their waterside mansion and simply vanished off the face of the earth. In this episode, you will ride along with police investigators in the nationwide hunt for these fugitives and witness how a single call to Crime Stoppers brings down one of Australia's biggest internet drug kingpins. This is Episode 4, The Tip-Offs, Part 2. Let's recap. In early 2016, Australian Border Force officers, intercepting and scanning parcels, arriving in Australia through the post, identified several similar parcels, all from the Netherlands. Officers grew suspicious and, on closer inspection, discovered the parcels contained illicit amphetamines. Given the parcels were so similar, Border Force officers believed they were part of a larger consignment bound for the same crime syndicate. Each parcel was addressed to a false name, Jimmy James or John James, at several post office boxes across the Gold Coast. Enter the QPS's crack team at the Synthetic Drugs Operations Unit. Detective Sergeant Zoe Knight from that unit recalled the beginning of the investigation.
So part of our liaison, I suppose, is with the Australian Border Force, and they referred over what appeared to be just a very simple investigation of a couple of packages coming from the Netherlands of different drug commodities going to post boxes down in the Gold Coast.
So they had identified that there were drugs in these packages?
Yes, they had.
And then they brought it to your unit's attention?
Yes. So we get referred it over, a drug referral, and then we assess the information, the intelligence, and try to identify who those people are and what they're doing.
Right, so you're really starting from scratch here.
Very much from scratch.
Where do you begin? I mean, I guess to identify the post office box owners?
Yep, so we'll just do general inquiries. And as we make those inquiries, we start to see, I suppose, deception coming through. And that's where we start undertaking overt and covert investigation strategies to progress that investigation.
Former member of the Synthetic Drugs Operations Unit, Acting Detective Sergeant Joe Toohey, and the team began surveillance on the Gold Coast post office boxes where the drug parcels were headed. By chance, a man tried to secure some large post office boxes at Runaway Bay on the Gold Coast and used a fake driver's license in that transaction. Through some intricate investigative work, police were able to link the Runaway Bay man with the drug parcels and ultimately established his true identity. This is Detective Sergeant Toohey in our last episode.
So when the initial intelligence reports came to our office, we were able to conduct checks on our police computer system called QPrime. We were able to identify that the name was fake. But one thing we can do within our QPrime system, we can check addresses. But the beauty about QPrime is that QPrime doesn't provide us with the latest persons living at that address. It also provides us with people who have historically resided at those addresses. So we were able to do checks on the address of the fake driver's license. And through those checks on the addresses, we were able to identify a person who had a similar first name and a similar date of birth. We were able to then check the driver's license photo on this person who we believed it was and on the fake driver's license, and they both matched, and hence we were able to identify Mr. Jones.
Jones was arrested, charged, and granted bail. Then, thanks to a Crime Stoppers tip-off, police were further able to link Jones to a Gold Coast suburban grow house or premises used for the cultivation of marijuana. Jones was not going to stop his lucrative business despite already being charged with drug offences. In September 2016, Jack Jones was once again arrested on the new grow house charges and held in custody due to his clear risk of reoffending. Just 2 weeks later, however, he applied for bail and was successful, albeit with strict conditions, including reporting to his local police station several times a week. Then in November, Jones failed to report to police. On visiting the Helensvale mansion, police discovered everything in its place. Even the family dog was at home. But Mr. and Mrs. Jones and their children were not. Here's Detective Sergeant Zoe Knight again.
So they vanished?
They vanished.
The Joneses.
We did every avenue and inquiry that we could think of.
Suddenly, the Helensvale house is abandoned?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did they take furniture? Did they take...
No, I believe they just packed up and left with the children. Left their dog.
The manhunt was on.
Planning on partying? How will you be getting home if you drink, don't drive? Your life and the lives of other motorists are not worth the risk. Plan ahead and get home safely.
For investigators involved in the Jones case, which came to be known as Operation Oscar Fetters, Their frustration was twofold. Firstly, police had apprehended these alleged offenders, and now the Joneses had slipped through the net. And secondly, investigators now faced looking for the proverbial needle in a haystack. Detective Sergeant Knight remembers the early days of the search for the Joneses.
The first point of contact was general inquiries that we do to see whether they've utilised services, everyday services that they may use, so banking and things like that. But one of the first ones I did was the children. So I confirmed that they had been pulled out of school and then did checks nationally to see whether they'd been re-enrolled in other schools.
And nothing came up?
Nothing came back. But I did have that suspicion because he did have false identification. So he did have driver's licenses and 18 plus cards. There were books on how to fraudulently make passports and things like that, that he may have produced other identification under different names so that obviously they wouldn't come up in our checks.
I imagine the lifestyle question we were talking about earlier is important. It seems to me that Mr. and Mrs. Jones had a real taste for that high life, as in the vehicles, the Rolex watches, the house, and more importantly, enrolling their children in elite schools. So they would have been mixing on the Gold Coast with a certain strata of people.
Yes.
And that could, I can only imagine, be very addictive once you get used to it and thinking you're a part of that hoi polloi, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose a social status.
Social status, yeah. Exactly. So why not replicate that wherever they move to next?
Well, one would think that if you were avoiding law enforcement, you would actually downplay, be a little bit more quieter. And
Yes, become a small target.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I suppose, again, that lavish lifestyle of what they're used to, yeah, they went straight back to it.
Could the Joneses have been so bold, so in contempt of the rule of law, so convinced that it didn't apply to them, that they might plant themselves in another state, in another city, and simply recreate the sumptuous lifestyle they'd grown accustomed to on the Gold Coast, all of it financed by illicit drugs? Could they have been so unbelievably arrogant?
Well, Stephanie, you've been dying to get me out here to this property here today. Tell me, what makes it one of SA's finest villas?
Well, how long is the camera reel? How much time do we have? I mean, this is just endless, the features we've got here. It's a character sandstone villa that's been meticulously restored. It's in a beautiful location. It's just a beautiful European thread throughout. And as you'll see when we bring you through, it's just pretty amazing.
So touching on location, what are some of the great things about Hyde Park?
Well, it's close to King William Road, the cosmopolitan cafe district, as well as shopping precinct, but also Army Road and really close to the city. But we've got lots of lovely schools around here as well.
Welcome to Hyde Park. Not the royal grandeur of those fabled and historic parklands in central London, nor the 16.2 hectares of lawns and fig trees in the heart of Sydney's CBD. This is Hyde Park in inner city Adelaide, an exclusive enclave and home to some of the most salubrious private homes in the entire City of Churches. The suburb's main thoroughfare, King William Road, is a foodie mecca with high-end restaurants, fresh produce outlets, and exclusive wine retailers, elite fashion boutiques, and health specialists. One real estate website does not beat around the bush when it comes to the status of the permanent residents of the Hyde Park precinct. It is, quite simply, upper class. The suburb also features one of Adelaide's finest and most exclusive schools, the Walford Anglican School for Girls, a day and boarding school with Adelaide's fourth most expensive annual fees for Year 12 at $30,840. Walford, with a rich 130-year history, prides itself on its mission to develop compassionate and courageous women who live with meaning, purpose, and principle. Hyde Park, its neighbouring suburb Goodwood, and that handful of exclusive inner southern suburbs that constitute the esteemed city of Unley is a safe, righteous, and respectable suburb, the playground of the well-to-do. And despite a few attempts to burgle a handful of famous fashion outlets on the King William Road a few years ago, it is not a place familiar with crime. Until a young, upwardly mobile couple, formerly of the Gold Coast, decided to make it their home. In 2017, with the Joneses having evaporated off the face of the earth, Crime Stoppers hit the media with its latest Operation Rome campaign to track down some of the country's most wanted fugitives. The Rome initiative got a lot of airtime on Australia's most popular morning breakfast shows like Sunrise and The Today Show. Operation Rome had, in previous years, proved to be highly successful in tracking down its targets. Here is then Crime Stoppers Australia Deputy Chair Trevor O'Hara explaining the objective of Operation Rome on Channel 10 in 2016.
In August this year, there were 19 wanted people on Australia's fugitive list. Now that number is 11 after 8 arrests were made thanks to helpful reports and tip-offs.
That's right. Now, in order to keep everyone safe, citizens far and wide are encouraged to work with Crime Stoppers and the police. So what do you need to know to help solve and to prevent crime? To explain this, we are joined by the Deputy Chair of Crime Stoppers Australia, Trevor O'Hara. Trevor, hello. Let's start with the definition of a fugitive. What is it?
Good afternoon, guys. A fugitive effectively is a wanted person who is fleeing or avoiding police capture. And clearly, these offenders that Crime Stoppers nominated to hunt around the country are those types of persons, because some of them have been avoiding police capture or the judicial system for years.
Trevor, is Australia's most wanted the right term to use?
Not in this case. Crime Stoppers focuses with the police on 20 wanted persons. Now, they're not our most wanted because police nominate suspects as part of the annual campaign that they believe are achievable. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're all wanted for high-profile crimes, but they're people who have been avoiding the police for years, and so we want the public's help to track them down.
Okay. Now, when you released an updated list earlier this year, there were 19 fugitives. You've since arrested 8. Of the 11 who remain, what are they wanted for?
Some of these offenders are wanted for acts like sexual assaults, drug-related offences, attempts to maim or injure other people, conspiracy to murder, and child-related offences. So these are offenders that we desperately want to get out of our community, as we do all crime. But these people have committed these crimes, been a part of the judicial system, and then have simply vanished. So we need the public's help to report what they know, if they've seen them especially, and hopefully we can help track the rest of them down.
Yeah, and get them into court. Is it important to look at everyone on the list, Trevor, not just those in your state or territory?
It is, absolutely. 8 offenders located, as you've already highlighted. 3 of those offenders were located in states or territories not where their crimes were committed. And that's why this is called Operation Rome. We need people to think widely. So these could be the man down the road, the guy at the shopping centre, someone you pass at the local post office. It could be anybody in your local community that we've put onto the list.
Operation Rome had a brilliant strike rate. In 2016, Crime Stoppers made public 19 mugshots, arresting 11 of those offenders with the cooperation of the general public. There was no reason to think 2017 would be any different. On Crime Stoppers Day in the winter of that year, the public was encouraged to get on board and, as the eyes and ears of communities across Australia, to bring offenders to justice.
In 2016, information provided to Crime Stoppers helped to arrest more than 7,000 criminals across Australia.
As an independent, community-based organisation, Crime Stoppers is the trusted link between the community and police. We need your support to achieve a safer community and everyone can play an active role. We don't need to know who you are, just what you know about criminals and their illegal activities. One piece of information can help to solve or even prevent a crime. Let's work together to ensure a safer Australia for everyone. Your community, your call.
Down in South Australia, home to the rarefied suburbs of Hyde Park and neighbouring Goodwood, police used Crime Stoppers Day to thank locals for their support.
Crime Stoppers plays an ever more important role in South Australia, providing police with a vital tool in the fight against illegal activity.
National Crime Stoppers Day is our opportunity to thank the community for their support and demonstrate the importance of their calls and the impact they have on the community.
Calls and online reports from members of the public have led to more than 19,000 apprehensions.
Crime Stoppers has been operating in South Australia for over 20 years now, and each year we get more and more calls and pieces of information which are critical for the police to continue to investigate serious criminal offences.
What was unusual about the 2017 iteration of Operation Rome was that this so-called rogue radar featured a husband and wife duo, namely Jack and Jill Jones, formerly of Helensvale, Gold Coast. Their mugshots sat alongside suspected murderers and sexual offenders. Detective Sergeant Knight of the Synthetic Drugs Operations Unit had a hunch that if Queensland Police could include Jack and Jill Jones in the 2017 National Crime Stoppers Operation Rome campaign, they just might get a lead on this elusive couple.
Over the years, I'd seen the importance of Operation Rome come through every year and just seen the success that they had with it. The opportunity came to put in for it, so I thought it was a great idea since we had exhausted all our other inquiries to see if we could get them on it, and, yeah, we were fortunate enough to.
So you were at the start of that process to get them into the Operation Rome for 2017.
Yeah, I thought it was an amazing opportunity to use that as an avenue, particularly because it's domestic outreach. It's the media involved in it. I thought it was a great opportunity.
That hunch proved to be a masterstroke.
Chasing leads and making breakthroughs, you can be a part of the team working to crack cases like this. Queensland Police Service is hiring. Head to policerecruit.qld.gov.au for all the information and incentives to join the QPS. That's policerecruit.qld.gov.au.
On the morning of Monday, August 12, 2017, the Operation Rome Rogues Gallery was seen on television screens across the nation, just in time for breakfast. Crime Stoppers South Australia quickly received a tip-off from a woman who had recently attended a Book Week parade at the exclusive Walford Anglican School for Girls. She immediately recognised Jill Jones from the school event. That afternoon, Jack and Jill Jones were arrested during a routine afternoon school run when they went to pick up their daughters. Adelaide's Advertiser newspaper reported that the arrest occurred in front of shocked parents and students. Detective Sergeant Knight described the moment when the call came through that the Joneses had been caught.
That was aired on national TV. And in other media outlets around the nation. And then a call came into Crime Stoppers very quickly.
It did. So the Joneses were the first ones out of the number of people that were put on that Operation Rome that year to be identified and apprehended.
What was the call that came in?
So I received the information that there had been a call giving a potential location and timing of when Mr. and Mrs. Jones would be. So that was obviously passed to the relevant state police, which at the time was South Australia Police. And then I had a conversation with them about the strategies and organisation that was going to be used to apprehend them.
So it turned out, did it not, that Jack and Jill Jones had enrolled their children in, from my research, probably the most elite school in Adelaide. Very, very elite, highly regarded school. And a mother at that school had identified Mrs. Jones courtesy of a book week meeting that they'd had.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's correct. That's my knowledge of it.
And how quickly did that Crime Stoppers call come in after her face was broadcast?
I believe it was an hour later.
Wow.
Yeah, and then within a couple of hours they were apprehended.
I mean, what is amazing is that, as you've illuminated, you've got, as police officers and investigators, quite an enormous range of resources.
Yes.
At your fingertips. And yet a mum in a school goes, looks across the table and goes, hang on a sec, I just saw her face on TV as one of the most wanted women in Australia.
Absolutely. Bang. It's our untapped resource. You know, yeah. We have this wide range of avenues and inquiries we can do. But again, it's just like one little piece where someone goes, hey, I've seen that face, and makes that call.
And that made all the difference.
It did. For me personally, you know, that time we've spent making all those inquiries, waiting for results to come back, and we get that phone call to say, hey, they're going to be here at a particular time.
So tell me when you first heard about all of this and your reaction.
Oh, I was absolutely ecstatic, you know. As I said, all that time trying to locate them, getting frustrated that we weren't over that time frame, and then getting that one phone call to say, you know, potentially we could have them in custody in an hour, was fantastic.
And, in fact, they were apprehended outside the school.
That's correct. So when they came to collect the children for the day is when the South Australia Police came in and apprehended them.
Acting Detective Sergeant Joe Toohey, who worked with Detective Knight at the Synthetic Drugs Operations Unit, still remembers receiving the extraordinary news from Adelaide.
Yeah, so that same day, Operation Rome aired on the Today Show. They got numerous phone calls. There were numerous people from Adelaide ringing up and saying, I know Mr. and Mrs. Jones, their two daughters go to this elite all-girls school in Adelaide.
I imagine it put a smile on your face, only that you had observed this couple with their aspirations to be a part of the elite jet set. And on the Gold Coast, they disappeared and popped up in Adelaide, still continuing that aspirational lifestyle in terms of very elite schools for their children, fancy cars, the whole thing replicated just in another city.
That's right. As I explained before, you know, people involved in the drug world, they get addicted to the money that they can make, and they just don't want to let go of that lifestyle. It was that day South Australian police were able to arrest Mr. and Mrs. Jones, and they executed a search warrant at their residence where they located that they were doing the similar things, but this time they were producing their own magic mushrooms and selling magic mushrooms on the dark web.
In what sounded like Groundhog Day, police searched the Joneses' Adelaide mansion. Yes, they had swapped one showcase Gold Coast property on the nation's east coast for another in the country's central south. Yes, they had pulled their daughters out of a private school when they went on the run and installed them in another in their new city. And there was one constant in their privileged lives. Behind closed doors, they were drug manufacturers and dealers. During the Adelaide raid of the Jones home, detectives discovered psilocybin, hallucinogenic mushrooms, generally known as magic mushrooms. According to the Alcohol and Drug Foundation, the most common magic mushrooms in Australia are called Liberty Caps, Blue Meanies, or Golden Tops. They are also produced as dried materials in capsules or as synthetic psilocybin, which takes the form of white crystalline powder, able to be produced in tablet or capsule form. The search of the Jones home also uncovered syringes and written instructions on how to grow drugs, not dissimilar to items found during the Gold Coast raid almost a year earlier. And just as Detective Sergeant Toohey found Get Rich Quick books in the Helensvale home, in Adelaide they seized from the Jones Library books on the notorious Colombian drug kingpin Pablo Escobar and other volumes on the dark net. Jack Jones had clearly learned nothing from his entanglement with the law back in Queensland, until it all caught up with him, thanks to a tip-off from the public. Ultimately, Jack Jones served time in Adelaide for his South Australian offences before he and his wife Jill were extradited back to Queensland to face the outstanding charges levelled against them before they disappeared. Detectives Knight and Toohey accompanied the fugitives when they were returned by plane to Brisbane.
Detective Sergeant Knight and I were both involved in the extradition of Mr. and Mrs. Jones. I still recall collecting them from the South Australian prisons. They seemed deflated. They seemed beaten. I can understand why, you know, just spending at least, you know, a year in a South Australian prison must be difficult, especially in those cold winters and those hot summers. They were quietly spoken, but you could see on their face that they had been beaten.
Did you then accompany them on a flight back to Brisbane?
We first attended the South Australian Magistrates Court, where we got approval from the local magistrate to extradite them back to Queensland. So Detective Sergeant Knight and I individually flew Mr. and Mrs. Jones back to Brisbane.
Did you sit with the couple in the plane? I mean, were they separated and you sat, each of you, with one of them?
They were released on different dates. So Mrs. Jones was released first. Yep. And then I think a few months later, Mr. Jones was released. So there was two separate extraditions. But we sat with them on the plane.
Was there any normal human discussion or interaction with them on that flight back, or were they quiet and sullen?
Yeah, we tried to engage them with conversations, but they, I remember Mrs. Jones, she was a very quietly spoken person. She looked defeated, and I think all she wanted to was get back to Queensland and see her two daughters.
For officers, this is a side of the job that we don't often hear about or consider, and it would have been, I imagine, for you on a human level, it would have been quite awkward and difficult in that sense. I mean, it's not a short flight back from Adelaide to Brisbane, but you just simply have to put your chin up and do your job, right?
Yeah, that's correct. With Mr. Jones, we were keen to engage Mr. Jones when we picked him up because, you know, we want to learn as much from him as we could from how he got involved in the dark web and how it all started for him.
Was he forthcoming with anything?
From memory, he was also defeated. He was willing to speak to us but not willing to go too far and divulge everything.
In September 2019... the Joneses pleaded guilty in the Supreme Court of Queensland to several charges, including drug production and trafficking. Crown Prosecutor David Finch told the court, "This trafficking business was well organised, it was sophisticated and highly successful and profitable." He added that there was a degree of criminal cunning used by the Joneses to protect their highly lucrative drug trade. Justice John Douglas was in no doubt that the Joneses' behaviour constituted very serious offending and of a scale he did not ordinarily see in court cases before him. He said, "So overall, it is not an attractive picture and one of the worst examples of higher level trafficking which I've come across in my career as a judge. Most of what one sees here tends to be at a more low-level street level of trafficking, but this is, in many respects, an order of magnitude beyond what I normally see. So, it's very serious offending." Jill Jones was sentenced to 6 years jail, her husband Jack to 9. He appealed that his sentence was manifestly excessive. The appeal failed.
She will never know, because of your information, her mother wasn't harmed. He will never know, because of your information, his work truck wasn't stolen. They will never know, because of your information, their business wasn't robbed. No one will ever know it was your information that helped keep our community safe. Report online anonymously. Search Crime Stoppers.
There is no doubt in the Jones case that the two public tip-offs to Crime Stoppers were absolutely critical in not just capturing and prosecuting these convicted drug dealers, but taking their substantial distribution network out of circulation. Operation Oscar Fetters exposed the power of Crime Stoppers. And while most people have heard of Crime Stoppers, many are not familiar with the details of how it actually works and why it's such a potent reporting tool for the general public and of such enormous benefit to investigating police.
My name is Zoe McKee. I'm a senior constable with Queensland Police. I'm currently attached to the Crime Stoppers unit of the Road Policing and Regional Support Command. I have been a police officer for 20 years and have been with the Crime Stoppers unit now for several years.
Senior Constable McKee was attracted to the Crime Stoppers unit given her previous experience in district crime prevention. It was community-based policing. She saw the power and impact of interacting with the general public, which sums up everything about Crime Stoppers.
I did come from a bit of a history of district crime prevention. So it was something that I was interested in. It was community-based, and I found the program had a real impact with general members of the public. And I really liked everything that it stands for. So members of the public can give us information, they can stay anonymous, and members of the public are our eyes and ears, and we really need to have a really good relationship with our community. Without a relationship with your local community, you're flying blind. So I really wanted to get involved with it. I liked the message that it delivered, and I thought it was a brilliant organisation, and it's far-reaching.
For Senior Constable McKee, the infinite variety of the job was also a part of its attraction.
When I first joined Crime Stoppers, some of the files that were coming in, they're all different. No day is the same. No files are really the same. You can have a vast, vast different of files that you're getting. And I liked the multitude of the files that were coming in. I liked the fact that some of the files were also very challenging. So where were they coming from? Is this information any good? What's the validity of this information? So that's what interests me originally to start off with.
Information given to Crime Stoppers can also reach into virtually every aspect of policing.
I mean, to use kids' language, in fact, I spoke to a friend just the other week and we were talking about Crime Stoppers and he said, oh, the dob-in place where you dob people in. That's a very simplistic view. It's much more than that, isn't it?
It is much more than that. We have a unique organisation that any member of the public can contact and contact knowing that they can stay anonymous, that they are anonymous. So when they do contact us, whether it's a criminal matter or the activity that they're seeing is suspicious, they are only known by a code number. So that code number that they are provided is just in relation to that information that they're providing. But it is such a valuable tool. Without this tool that we have, so many more crimes would go unsolved. And to give you an idea, since Crime Stoppers has actually been running.
When's that been since?
1989. Since the commencement of Crime Stoppers, we have been included in some really high-profile cases, murders and uncovered drug syndicates. And just an example of that, we have been fundamental in the arrest of 25 murders and 19 attempted murders.
I didn't know that. It's incredible.
Hmm.
That would give Crime Stoppers great value in the eyes of your colleagues, right?
Yes, I believe so. By the time you get a Crime Stoppers file, by the time any investigating police officer gets a Crime Stoppers file, the information has been gleaned, it has been vetted, the information is good to go. So if you do get a Crime Stoppers file, you know that the likelihood that it's going to end in a successful result, being an arrest, is highly likely.
Senior Constable McKee said the people who contacted Crime Stoppers came from all walks of life and had numerous motivations to make the call.
For example, with the drug campaign that we're running, the Dobbin dealer campaign, it's really targeted at the illicit drug aspect, but I think some of the people, well, I know some of the people who are contacting us, they're either caught up in the trade themselves and they're looking for a way out, or they're concerned about their loved ones or their family or themselves for their own safety, or they're just general members of the public whose loved ones, unfortunately, have struggled with a drug addiction or they've lost somebody and they've just simply had enough. They want the drugs off the street.
So there are a lot of incredible human stories behind Crime Stopper stories, aren't there?
They really are. Like, our community are our eyes and ears. Without our community and without that community involvement and having a good relationship with our community, we've got nothing. Like, as police in general, we really heavily rely on our community to contact us, to give us information that they've got, because there's going to be a lot more eyes and ears with them than what they'll ever be police. So it's a really valuable tool that we have.
If those people choose to give information anonymously, they have to really trust that that contract with the police is adhered to.
Oh, absolutely. It has to be. Our informants are protected by legislation. At no time are the informants' details provided on any of the official document. They don't have to attend court and they don't have to give evidence if they don't want to. Our informants can provide their details to the Crime Stoppers unit if they wish to, which is really valuable for our investigating officers because it gives them the opportunity to clarify information that's been provided and also ask further questions. But they are still protected by legislation. At no time do their details go, like I said, on any of the official documentation, and they do not have to give evidence.
One of the biggest misconceptions some people have is that Crime Stoppers is actually a unit of the police department.
It might be a good time at this point to clarify, because I didn't know, the situation with Crime Stoppers itself as an entity and its relationship to the QPS and your unit. People think Crime Stoppers is the police.
No, it's not. It is a very common misconception. Crime Stoppers is a volunteer organisation. They are two separate entities. And QPS assists Crime Stoppers. And what I mean by that is there is never any funds or funding that is ever interchanged between Crime Stoppers or QPS. But what QPS does to assist Crime Stoppers is we have a call centre where civilian staff will take calls via the toll-free 1-800-333-000 number. And we also have a web page, which is crimestoppers.com.au. So when the civilians take our call takers, speak to our informants, and they're getting all the information from our informants. From that information, a report is generated. That generated report is then transferred through to the Crime Stoppers police unit, where it is then assessed, evaluated, the validity is assessed, and if it requires further action, well, then it's disseminated out to the districts or the regions, because we do work on a regional level, so statewide and interstate, and in the very rare occasion, internationally. And the same thing goes with our phone calls as well.
For those not familiar with the way Crime Stoppers works, I asked Senior Constable McKee to take us step by step through the process.
I'm being a member of the general public now as I'm speaking to you.
Yeah.
Say I have something I feel compelled to report to you, to mm-hmm. Crime Stoppers, mm-hmm. and I want to do it anonymously. I can either phone
yes.
or go via the internet website.
Yes.
Say I go by the phone. My call is answered
yes.
by, did you say, a volunteer civilian?
No, it is a civilian. They're called client service operators.
Client service operators.
Yep.
So someone, a client service operator will answer that call?
Correct.
Now, if I'm giving information and I say, I wish to remain anonymous, but here is the information, am I being recorded?
No. So IP details, if you're submitting a report via the website, are not recorded nor traced, and the same thing goes with our phone calls as well.
Right.
No phone calls, no IP details are ever traced or recorded.
So How is the information essentially committed? Is it handwritten notes or is it typed into a computer?
It's typed into a computer.
It's typed. Okay.
Yes.
So the person on the end of the line will virtually transcribe
what the informant is saying. That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. I imagine that would involve a high level of transcription skills.
Yes, it does.
Wouldn't be a two-finger typist at that level.
No. No, not by any means. But our client service operators, they are really good with our informants too. Like, they will not rush you. If you've got very detailed information that you have to provide or you'd like to provide, they will take as long as it needs to take to help you with the information that you want to give to police.
I guess in a way too that in order to encourage a genuine conversation which could elucidate more depthful information, that the person who takes the call would have to be skilled in a sense to be able to carry or encourage a conversation with a caller like me who's phoning in.
That's correct. So all of our CSOs, they go through a period of training, and once they are competent with that training, then they are allowed to take Crime Stopper calls and take calls from the general public. Until they've completed that training and they've passed all assessments, they stay in training until they're competent to be able to do so.
Say I'm calling in with a piece of information that may not necessarily change the world. Does the operator make a judgment on that information, or do they take down everything and send it to another level to be assessed?
They take down absolutely everything. Any little bit of information that you have to provide will be noted. Everything that is from that phone call is placed into a report, and then that report is forwarded through to the Crime Stoppers police unit, whereby you have skilled officers who will then assess the validity of that information.
Something you know may be the breakthrough police need. Please, if you have information which could assist an investigation in Australia, call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000 or go to crimestoppers.com.au. Your information could be the key to cracking the case.
While Crime Stoppers made an enormous contribution to cracking the Jack and Jill Jones case, the couple's flagrant flouting of the law and the broader impact of the drug distribution business that made them rich didn't end when they were put behind bars. The community impact of drugs is omnipresent, and criminals like the Joneses, who enjoy lavish lifestyles on the back of their ill-gotten gains, are often completely removed or deliberately oblivious to the damage they're inflicting on the community. Thankfully, there is help at hand, 24 hours a day.
I'm Kira Palmer. I'm the director of ADIS 24/7 Alcohol and Drug Support.
ADIS 24/7, as the name clearly indicates, is an alcohol and drug support service offering telephone and online counselling across Queensland for people concerned about their own alcohol or drug use, or that of friends or family. The service is anonymous and confidential.
People can call through at any stage in their journey. We do know that it takes people a really long time to seek help for these kinds of concerns. So it might be, and it often is, the first time that they're calling in to seek help. Mm-hmm. It might be that they're seeking some information or just kind of testing the waters to see what's out there. However, a lot of people are also ready for treatment, and therefore we do have a wide range of treatment services across Queensland that we can warm refer people into. So we help them to find their service that's appropriate to them, and we can provide them with all of the information that we receive in the phone call in order to allow them to be referred into a service and not have to keep continually telling their story again.
While every human being is different, I asked Kira if people who reached out to ADIS for help had reached some sort of threshold in their lives and wanted to positively move forward from that.
Quite often we see people who call us up when they have started to see some consequences to their substance use. We see substance use often as a way of coping with other concerns that are going on for them. But we do know that it's a short-term coping strategy, basically. So we do know that in the short term, it might help with what they're going through. However, by the time they're calling us, there has been other consequences. And that might be in the way of it's impacting on them in a legal sense. So they might have been in trouble with the law. It might be impacting on their relationships, their finances, or getting in the way of other priorities such as work or study. We do know that any drug use has the potential to cause harm. And we do see more longer term health and mental health consequences with longer term regular use. However, this can also occur with one-time drug use as well.
And as Kira explains, alcohol and drugs can permeate every level of society.
Some people might be calling us where they've used a substance once and they may have had some negative consequences from it. Drug use ranges from occasional through to dependence or daily or regular use. And the consequences are different for everyone, or the harms involved are different for everyone. You know, we're not just seeing people who have other, you know, financial difficulties or are in a lower socioeconomic area. We're seeing people who might have the ability to even afford things like private rehab as well if they're experiencing these concerns. There are harms at all different levels. An individual's substance use doesn't just impact on themselves. It really does impact on everybody around them. The police tend to work in that area of supply reduction, so they're involved more in trying to find those who are manufacturing or dealing substances. One of the ways in which ADIS supports people is by being able to connect them with services and therefore to reduce the overall demand of substance use within the community. Because we know if somebody is continuing to use substances, it is often impacting a lot of people around them as well.
One of the outstanding qualities of ADIS is that it is a thoroughly professional service, dedicated, quite simply, to helping its callers. There is no other objective. I guess we need to underline here that with your work, there is absolutely no judgment at any point in the process.
Absolutely no judgment at all. One of our biggest aims is to actually reduce the stigma within this group of our population. We don't want to be using language that stigmatizes or isolates people, because we do know that when you are going through substance dependence, you often are quite isolated in general, and we want to build community and support around an individual to help them to find ways to manage their situation.
Do you think those old stigmas and old tropes may have over time prevented people from seeking help with this issue in their lives? I mean, it's a shame to think that, but it may very well have been the case, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we know it can take over a decade for somebody to reach out to get help. And one of the reasons might be that they have felt really excluded from society, really isolated and really stigmatized.
If there's someone even listening to this episode of the podcast that potentially having issues with substances and they've heard you and they've heard this, what would you say to them?
It takes a lot of courage to reach out for support, and by taking that first step, it might feel like it's really daunting. However, there are people out here who are available to support you 24 hours a day. I would say to somebody who is experiencing concerns to give us a call or even just jump onto our website. There is information on there and you can have a bit of a look and see if we might be someone you feel comfortable reaching out to. Our counsellors are available 24 hours a day to support you with any of your concerns.
At one end of this difficult societal equation, we have ADIS helping people to reduce, if not totally eliminate, their use of drugs. And at the other end, we have the QPS working tirelessly to prevent the manufacture and dealing of those drugs, and the essential work of Crime Stoppers. This work is not easy. But there is one critical message for the public in relation to Crime Stoppers and ADIS 24/7 alcohol and drug support. As Senior Constable McKee stresses, just reach out. Make the call.
Can I just say to your callers that let us be the one to decide whether that information is worth of any value? Because we do have a lot of people out there go, oh, I don't know if it's worth calling. It's probably nothing. Can I just say, call, let us be the one to decide? Because it could just be that piece of the puzzle that is missing that could literally solve or crack a case for police.
The Queensland Police Service is grateful to those anonymous members of the public who contacted Crime Stoppers, as well as Crime Stoppers Queensland, who are dedicated to empowering the community to provide information that supports solving and preventing crime. And to Queensland Health and ADIS 24/7 Alcohol and Drug Support, who worked across a range of projects to address community drug harm. The Queensland Police Service acknowledges all members, including those attached to the Crime and Intelligence Command, who contributed in some way to the investigation of this case, and their ongoing efforts to prevent, disrupt, respond, and investigate serious crime. Breakthrough is a Moo Media production in conjunction with the Queensland Police Service. I'm Matthew Condon, writer and host. Our producer is Kate Morris. Original music and audio production is by Wasabi Audio. This message is brought to you by ADIS 24/7 Alcohol and Drug Support.
ADIS helps thousands of Queenslanders each year with advice on alcohol and drug use. Whether you're calling for yourself or on behalf of a loved one, ADIS have an experienced team that can provide you with over-the-phone counselling at any hour of the day. You might have a question about a specific substance, you might be wondering what to look out for, or you might want to learn more about treatment options. Give us a call on 1800 177 833 or explore our online resources at adis.health.qld.gov.au.
If listening to this podcast has raised any concerns about your own or someone else's use of drugs, you can contact ADIS 24/7 Alcohol and Drug Support. ADIS provides anonymous and confidential telephone and online counselling for people in Queensland with alcohol and other drug concerns and their families. You can call ADIS on 1800 177 833 or go to adis.health.qld.gov.au. That's adis.health.queensland.gov.au.